As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back in to One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner as always. And Nick... Have you recovered? Busy weekend for you out at Spartan Stadium there for that classic, and then Ford Field for... I wasn't sure you were coming to Ford Field, frankly. I'll be honest.
Well, I mean, we had the thought that maybe this would be the day that we would see something different from the Lions, but it was not. Yeah, no, those weekends always seem to catch up with me at like Monday morning. They always hit me. I always feel like I get through Sunday night. I'm like, I think I'm doing okay. And then Monday comes, I'm like, oh God, like what a disaster. But yeah, no, it was definitely action-packed Saturday. And then Sunday, which we will talk about here, was a disappointing problem, possibly. I don't know. That was not good. Not good at all. So a lot to discuss as the Lions go into bye. None of it good, though, really.
Yeah, but, well, like you said, I mean, I picked them twice earlier in the year to win games. And I thought about it, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it a third time.
Right.
And I guess fortunately for me.
I know, right?
Because, like, but you're right. I mean, it did feel like it set up.
I mean, the Eagles aren't good. I mean,
they're not that good.
No.
And your podcast partner on the beat over Brendan there, Brendan Quinn's an Eagles fan and wants their coach fired already.
Right.
And they're not playing that well, or they hadn't been playing that well heading into that game. So it seemed like one where if the Lions gave one of their, you know, sort of more...
Exactly.
Energetic efforts, they could hang in there, and I mean that's the worst
they've
played all year, and that was comparable to some of the really really bad Matt Patricia games.
Yeah.
I mean it was there wasn't really anything that you took away from that was a positive.
That's horrible. Yeah, that was by far their worst effort of the season. And you know there's injuries and all these things going on here, and of course there's limitations with the roster and all the things we've talked about before. But really the yes, that was listless, and that was. That was a bad effort, the likes of which we have not seen this year, I don't think. Sustained for a full four quarters. And to be frank, kind of concerning, to be honest with you, you know, because and Campbell said this either on Monday or right after the game, you know, big part of their job, and we've talked about this, Chris, all year back into January, like big part of their job is to keep guys on the bus, you know, and keep guys bought into the program here and keep guys bought into the challenge of, you know, not taking steps backward, even when it's really rough and kind of maintaining that upward trend, even if it's barely noticeable to anybody else. And I think that this was one where not everybody was on the bus. And like, that's concerning going into a bye, you know, and I think that for a team like this right now, we heard from guys after the game like Tracy Walker who, you know, are going to take this personal and you hope for their sake that's just a blip or whatever and it's a one-time off deal. But for Dan Campbell, this is a big challenge here. You can't lose these guys. If we see something like that again, like, that's a problem. They can't play like that. That was horrible. Horrible effort all the way around against a team that you should have been able to compete with. And, you know, that just can't happen. And I think that as they go forward here, you know, that's the first time really that I thought, Chris, that like Dan Campbell, I mean, he owned it, of course, as he always does, but that was bad. That was a bad week capped off by a bad day, and they need to erase that one pretty quick.
Well, I think sort of naturally this was a break, obviously, because the bye week's coming up. But I also think that just because of the way that game happened,
yeah,
it does feel a little bit like a fork in the road here, because I think the fan base has reached a point where, you know, I think people were generally willing to accept this as a rebuild year. You play the young guys, we'll just go through the pain of it all. People are not going to put up with that.
No
that
way.
That was ridiculous. No. That was an awful game from start to finish. They got out coached. They got clobbered in the trenches, which is where they've held up pretty well most of the year.
Just terrible in there. Yeah.
Just beat everywhere. Goff was bad. You know, the play calling was bad. Like everything. It was everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think, like you said, I think that you start stringing those together and people start asking questions about the overall direction of this thing. And, you know, we're not at a point now. Even at 0-17, I think Dan Campbell is probably back for another year or two at least. But if it's 0-17 and you get beat by 40 every week the rest of the week, the rest of the way, you know, you got to try and reevaluate at least parts of this, if not the whole thing again. And so this is, I mean, I think that this is a big moment to see how they come out of the bye and respond. And I guess it's fair to say that this is an outlier.
Yeah, it is right now.
But it's also been the past two home games. You know, Cincinnati was bad, and this was worse. So now you have two straight home games coming off those tough losses. It was each time coming home off a tough loss, and they just didn't respond. And so I think that that is problematic. And Campbell got asked after the game, you know, do you think your message is still getting through? And he said, I think so, but I guess you got to look at that right now because because of how he played. And I asked Michael Brockers the same thing. Like, you're a leader in that locker room. Do you feel like guys are still getting the message? And he said he thought so, but maybe they have to be more vocal about things, or maybe they need to change their approach a little bit. Because I don't know. I mean, though, that's one of those days where I think, and I wrote this after, it's easy to sort of look at these games and say, well, they didn't try very hard. And sometimes you just get your ass kicked. But that one... Right. Right. They did not try very hard.
No, it never showed up. Yeah. It never got there, right? Like, I mean, Brockers didn't, no one played well. And we've seen this in stretches earlier in the year for when they're like, and they don't have many veterans, but when Anzalone, Brockers, and Nick Williams has given them good stuff this year. And I know we've been critical of Nick Williams, but he's given them good efforts. When those three guys play that bad, and they were bad in this game, you know, like, I wonder sometimes if that trickles down on defense. I don't know. But, like, Campbell had the point about, you know, there are guys on the team right now that we're still sort of, like, trying to figure out what you can handle, what you can't handle. Can you handle more? Can you not handle more? And I think that those are fine things to have. But, like, you know, they loaded up a guy like Charles Harris and he didn't play well. And then you look at a guy like Austin Bryan, and he's maybe not as loaded up, and maybe he plays a little bit better. And is he not playing enough, and is Harris playing too much? Is Derek Barnes not playing enough, and is Reeves Maben playing too much? Like, you know, these are questions I think that Campbell's trying to answer. But when I looked at that game, you know, that one to me was as much about the guys that they sort of like paid to come in here to help these rookies as it was anything else. That was terrible. You know, that's what I wondered, you know, because like when we saw... You know, Goff doesn't play well. You're down to not many veterans left on offense. But when your veterans on defense aren't doing anything either, it's like, you know, that's a hard one to see. And that's why we have to sort of wonder, where's that leadership going to come from internally in the locker? Like, who's going to be the guy that sort of like puts a stop to it? Because I think it's got to be a collective. And Campbell's a big part of that, too. And so is Aaron Glenn. But like, that was concerning. Yeah, across the board, it was just not good.
Yeah. And Brockers said, you know, the player or the coaches can't want it more than the players. And I think that was probably the most telling quote that came out of that, that I think that they all felt it, that it was, it just wasn't there
just
in that
day.
Game. And like
bad
you mentioned, day. I mean, Campbell said Reeves Maben was one of the guys who stood out to him, mentioned him Sunday night. And then he mentioned again Monday as one, he stood out as someone who at least was playing hard, if not all that well, which is fine. But you're right. I think Brockers and Williams had bad games. Anzalone, this was one of his, you know, he's sort of been on the roller coaster this year. This was back to like that Green Bay game in week two or whatever, three, missing tackles and holes and not getting out to the perimeter, all those things that he was doing in that game. And so, yeah, I mean, you take those guys out. Like, I went back and watched. I thought Aleem McNeil actually was all right again. But yeah, there's no one around him.
Right,
you know?
It's not enough. Yeah,
and,
right.
Like, Barnes flew in there a few times. And mm-hmm. But, again, like, you're getting one play and not enough from those guys. And, like, Trey Flowers, to me, is one that I think we've all kind of come to the conclusion that the Lions are going to have to figure out something with him this offseason because it doesn't make sense to keep paying him in the direction that they're going and the way that he's playing. But that was another game where I know he's not 100%, but he may as well have not been out there. And so, yeah, again, they got clobbered in the trenches, and it was mostly the guys that were here last year or have been in this league for a while. So that makes it hard to kind of move forward from. And I don't know. I mean, I look at the schedule and I think they could hang with Pittsburgh and Cleveland coming out of the bye, but who knows? If you play like that, they're going to get killed because they don't have the talent to make up for it.
No, they don't. And that's the hard part, especially with the injuries right now.
Right. And that game, you know, the end of the first half, they have a chance to get some points on the board and Campbell kind of bungles the time management there. And then Goff takes a sack on 4th-and-1 and they don't score. And then they come out in the third quarter, they had the Eagles pinned back inside their own 10. It was 3rd down. Julian Okorah came close to getting a sack in the end zone, and then Hurts runs up the middle for like 25 yards. And if you go back and watch that play, you can see Flowers is one of the guys. You can see like guys looking up at the ceiling, slumping over. Like that was the last moment where it's like, all right, well, that's it. They're done.
They don't have it today. So, yeah, right.
I don't know. I don't know how you come out of that, but you know,
it's an interesting conversation because you don't have anywhere else to go. Like there's nowhere,
right, yeah.
You know, you can't go to the bench. And I think that I had people tell me this, and the, you know, Campbell takes the blame and, you know, is always going to take the blame, right? That's just how Dan is. I mean, that's always how he's going to be. And I think that that's genuine. We've talked about this. He was embarrassed after that game. We could tell, right? I think Campbell does a pretty bad job of hiding his emotions,
right?
Sure. And I think that we could tell, we usually can tell, having been around him now, and he was embarrassed, and I think that, rightly so, and he showed it. But I think that this is one, too, where I look at Brad Holmes and I say, you've got to get better at some of this, because there's not enough on this team. There's not enough on the team right now. And if you're asking him, if you're asking Campbell to shoulder all that and sort of like reach into the bag and there is literally nothing there. And I know that, you know, money is hard right now, but this has got to be one that everybody wears. And, you know, they talk about being in this together. And, you know, I know that Campbell, you know, was out front and is always going to take those bullets. And I think that's part of his job. I think he thinks, or he sees that as part of his job. Whether or not they all do, I don't know, but I think that's how he is. But this is one where they all got to wear, because there's not enough on the team, Chris. I mean, we've talked about this. Not enough. There's nowhere to go. Like when someone is struggling, I don't know who they're supposed to go get. You know what I mean? Like you can't bench some of these guys because there's no one to put in. And you know, like Goff is Goff, but it's also like when you've got Campbell sitting here racking his brain about maybe we got to play St. Brown more, the rookie receiver, because we don't have another single guy on the roster that can get open and make a catch. Like that's the situation. So it's hard, but, you know, like, I think it's one that this is one where the whole organization has to wear it a little bit, because we've talked about that. There were spots on this team that they went into the season, even before the injuries. And we talked about, like, you're really thin here. There's nothing here. Nothing proven. And if it doesn't shake the way you think it's going to shake, this could be very bad. And, you know, like, I feel like we've sort of seen some of those realities kind of creep up here. And I think that that's important to note as well.
Yeah, and again, you know, this is a team that if they're going to win, if they're even going to hang in games, when we've seen them do it, they've been really good up front on offense. They've controlled the line of scrimmage and run the ball. And on defense, they've sort of kept things in check. They've had good games against the run, at least gotten into some 3rd down spots. And that, you know, that didn't really happen. Some of that probably was that Jamal Williams wasn't available. I mean, he's right, a big piece of that offense, and losing him, like you see, Swift is not. For as dynamic as DeAndre Swift has been catching the ball, they're not getting much with him as a runner right now. And I don't, you know, we can talk about whether that's scheme or Swift or play calling or what, you know, the line, all of the above. But it's a big deal when Jamal Williams isn't in there. And so they sort of lost their ability to play that game the way that they wanted to on Sunday. Right. But I don't know. I mean, you sort of mentioned it in your opening comments. I think there has to be some concern here that even the guys that you brought in here to kind of lead this thing, you're 0-8. You've had the Baltimore loss, the Minnesota loss, the Rams loss to some degree. Like, you've had some tough moments here, and now every single game, every single practice, the media's going in there. Oh, how you feel about going 0-17?
Right, right.
Are you thinking about it? Is it on your mind? And it's not going to stop for the rest of the year until they get a win. And I mean, how much do they have to worry about this now that just guys are going to hit Big that time. Point where they shut it down, especially the higher paid guys or guys who maybe are headed to free agency? What are you going to get the rest of the year here?
I mean, I'd be worried about it right now. If they weren't thinking about it before, they sure as hell are now, because everybody brought it up to them. So, I mean, like, right. You know what I mean? Right. So, like, it got brought up several times. I mean, I would definitely be concerned about it. And I think that that's the thing where we talk about, like, when you look around on this team for guys that you're like, okay, maybe that guy can come get him out of this, right? Maybe he can help him. You know, the guys that you think about are either rookies or Swift, like a second-year guy. It's just there's not a lot of Hockenson, but, you know, he's so – at this point, every single time he walks on the field, he's got 37 guys covering him, right? I mean, like, there's only so much he can do. And so there's just not a lot of guys you can turn to. Tracy Walker, I think, is, like, trying to get there. He's working his ass off. Julian Okwara is trying to get there. They're not there yet, you know, and it's like there's no one to – there's no one to save them. There's no one to come, like, steady the water. That's what it feels like a lot of times. And save is probably the wrong word, but there's no one on this team on either side of the ball that you can, like, turn to and say, hey, man, go, like, can you go settle us down, please? Go make a play. Go do something that gets us, like, you know, gets our feet back on the ground here. Because I feel like that's what we're seeing from these guys is a string of mistakes will happen on either side of the ball. And there's just nowhere to turn, you know? There's, like, nowhere to turn to, like, anchor the thing back to reality. And it just goes right off the deep end and into, like, this place that you're like, what is going on? You're like, how are they this bad? How can they go from looking that together to that bad?
Right.
And I think that's what it is. There's just nothing there in terms of, like, a veteran. All the veterans that they've brought in here, man, I don't want to say they've all been disappointing, but, like, a lot of them have been disappointing. And it's not been good. And I think that there's guys, and, you know, a lot of them haven't made a lot of money, and some of them are hurt. And so what do you want, right? But, like, I mean, hey, you want to be on an 0-17 team or not? Like, that's, I think some of these veterans need to step up too. And I think that's what needs to be maybe hammered here a little bit as they go forward. But that's a delicate balance too, because, like we've talked about, you're asking a lot of these guys sometimes.
Well, to me, this is the worst part, I think, of them not, you know, like Justin Tucker not missing that kick, or Minnesota not finishing that. Because if you're 2-6 right now, I think it's a lot quieter if you lose a game like that. You know, it'd be ugly, but I don't think you'd have the panic everywhere about being 0-8 and about, you know, I do think, I know people criticize, I see it in my mentions all the time and on the comments, people criticize the Detroit media about being too negative.
Yeah.
The 0-17 stuff. Getting into it now probably is a little bit on the negative side. But there's also, what else are you going to... This is the reality, like, in front of you. You're 0-8. You got a tough schedule. You're not playing well.
Are we supposed to act like it's not possible?
I think this is the biggest downside to the not winning at least one of those games, or maybe two of them, because I think, by and large, what you're talking about is sort of what this whole season is about for the coaching staff. And Aaron Glenn said it, you can't be afraid of young guys. Let's throw them out there. Let's see what happens. And so I think that a lot of the evaluation process here is, okay, well, when we're falling apart like this, who's going to step up and lead us? Because we want that guy to be here
for the next three years.
And most of the, I think, you know, like Anzalone and Raymond and some of these guys they keep mentioning, I think are those guys for them in their minds. It didn't happen Sunday. I think it's happened a decent amount this year. But I think that that's a lot of what they're looking at right now. Who's going to step up in those moments? Who's going to help us, you know, make a play when everything's falling apart? And if no one does it, all right, well, our shopping list for the offseason is a lot longer than we thought it was going to be. Yeah. But, you know, I think that and if you're 2-6, you can be a little more liberal with how you, you know, kind of leave guys out there and put them in some tough spots. At 0-8, it gets a little tighter because you've got to win a football game at some point here.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you look at the sheet here and you're like, Ragnow's still hurt, Decker's still hurt. This is a team that a lot of those guys that they're paying big money to are in the lines, like we've talked about. Like, those are the guys that you're looking to. Like, you know, when I'm sitting here looking at the, you know, the rep chart or whatever of the game, and it's like, well, who's the guy that you would look to in a moment to settle you out there on the field Sunday? And like, Jonah Jackson, a guard? is Jonah Jackson going to be the guy that, you know, like, that can't, you know, and Jonah Jackson's having a really good year. He can't be the guy that, like, anchors your team down. You know what I mean? Like, the answer for them is right now is like Khalif Raymond, who plays his butt off, but like cannot be the answer to that question. He's just not good enough, talent-wise, to be the guy who goes and like gets you out of a jam. And like, those are the, we're not seeing enough of that. And I think that, you know, they rolled the dice with some of these receivers and they've had some injuries and all this stuff. And that's one thing. But I think when you flip it over to the defensive side, that's where I kind of like still scratch my head. I mean, I don't know what they're doing going forward with, you know, and the injuries and everything else, but like Will Harris and Amani or it's just not there. I mean, they are not playing well. Those are two guys that I keep looking at too, that I'm just like, they have to get better. They have to come over, you know, it has to be more than it is. And, you know, they're not veterans either, but like in this situation, they are, right? So it's like, yeah. I know they're in tough spots, but those have got to be guys that you're looking to, and they're, and it's not there. And it's like, where does it come from? And, you know, unless we see somebody turn a corner in these next couple, it's hard to see. You know, it's just hard to see where it's going to come from because there's no sure thing here, you know?
Well, I think not to, I do feel like I and everyone in general probably pins too much on this guy in the first place. But a lot of times when things are going wrong like that, the guy you're looking to settle it is your quarterback.
Right. Yep. Yep.
And that's not really how this team is built either. Because,
no, it's not.
You know, he's a guy, after the LA game, someone asked Dan Campbell what he thought about how Goff performed. And that was maybe Goff's best game. And
it
then
was
he threw the pick
game
at the end.
Yeah.
And Campbell said something like, well, he played well enough for us to win with him. And that, you know, that's all you can ask. And that's kind of where the bar is with Jared Goff, right? Like, if he's going to win games,
yeah.
Right. But that doesn't help you really when
no.
you're in these spots and it's 17-0 and you're like, well, we could take the three here, but let's try and get seven. We're reeling. We need a touchdown. Your offense isn't really built to come up with plays in those moments. And your quarterback's not a guy who's going to, all right, let me just rip one into the end zone here. That's not him. That's not him. And so that makes it a little tougher too, because again, I do think in terms of just the demeanor that he has and his willingness to go out there every week and play when he's banged up and all those things, I think Jared Goff is a really good guy in this locker room for them. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, as we're talking about who's going to pull you up by your bootstraps when you're struggling,
it's
probably not your quarterback. And so that makes things tougher too.
Yeah, and I mean, like, now we've arrived at the issue here, and that's the reality of the situation, is that he is not good enough from a talent perspective or standpoint in this, you know, what you need him to be as an athlete to extend plays, to make plays when they're not there, right? That's what you need quarterbacks to do in 2021, and he can't do it. And so I look at this now, and I sit here and say, like, are we going to see this? Are we just magically going to see this happen in the next 8 weeks? I got to tell you, I don't see it. I don't see it. So it becomes a question now, a greater question of what are you doing with Goff? Is he actually helping your offense grow when everyone's healthy and out here? Is that a question that you can confidently answer? If you had everybody healthy right now on the field, would you be feeling better about growth as an offense, like all these guys getting better with Goff at quarterback? Like, I don't know if you can say that confidently. Like, he's there to get you exactly what a play is called to get you sometimes, and it's almost never more, and he never makes a play when it's off schedule or time to make a play. And I'm sorry, that's just, you cannot be paid starting quarterback money in the NFL and have those things attached to your game. And I think that you could look at his last like 25 games and those would all show up on there. I mean, that's a lot of evidence, and he's not helping them He's not helping them beyond the well, that wasn't, you know, that called. No, you're not. You're just running the call and you're really doing nothing else. And at that point, you look up and you say, like, he's not an answer. He's not helping. He's not steadying the ship. He's not anchoring the team. You know, it's not all his fault, but by result of what his position is, if that's the situation, then he's making it worse. And I think that that's how you have to look at these first eight games. Period. End of story. Not good enough. If you were, if the season ended today and we were giving an evaluation on Jared Goff, we would say the Lions have to move on from him. They have to figure out how to get out of this. That's what we would say. Now, he could change that over the next nine. I don't know. But that's the reality today. And I think that, you know, as we go forward, I think the time has to be up on, like, do we have enough to see? Do we have enough on this? Or can we? No. I mean, I think that now you have to start having tougher conversations about Jared Goff and what he's giving this team and what you can do otherwise. And if it's going to be too difficult to get out of, then I don't know what the answer is. But, like, man, this is tough. You can't. Can you keep going like this? You know, I mean, there's nothing there. It's listless. And, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, well, the one thing you said, I think, is entirely true, which is, and we talked about this, I think, leaving the building on Sunday. It's the idea that they would need more time to evaluate this, I think we knew pretty much what Goff's pros and cons were coming in. As we've mentioned, I think the hope was that he would lean more into those pros and sort of rediscover his game and all that stuff.
That
obviously hasn't happened, so you got to sort of reset and say, okay, well, if this is what he's going to be, then what does that do for us? To your other point, though, I tweeted out on Tuesday a clip from, as I was rewatching the game, there was a play where, I think it was a third down play, and now I'm not sure in my head, but DeAndre Swift was lined up to go to the far right on... to Goff's far right, down by the sideline. The Lions flooded that side of the field with three guys. Goff looked to Hockenson first. He was covered. Swift delayed for a second, ran a little slant, was wide open, could have gotten 20, 25 yards. Goff didn't see him, didn't throw the ball to him. Everyone who saw the clip, about 90% of the people who saw the clip were ripping on Goff, and then another 10% of the people were like, well, Matt Nelson got killed on that play, and so Goff didn't have time. And so I think that there is something to that, too, where you say, what would this look like if he had everyone? I think it probably would look more coherent than it does, because...
It would.
Taylor Decker and Frank Ragnow, like, we talked about how thin the margins were for this team. Those are... I mean, your two... Other than Swift and Hockenson, your two best offensive players... and your two anchors up front. And so getting Decker back, if, you know, they just activated him off IR, we don't know exactly when he's going to rejoin the lineup, but if it's in the near future, that I think that does help you, not just in your Goff evaluation, but in your evaluation in total of what this is going to be moving forward. I don't know. What's your read on sort of,
because
Decker
point.
Coming back, maybe changes Nelson, a lot of things here with
God
Sewell
love,
and Goff and all that. Yeah. So what's your read on that situation?
That's a good point, because God love Matt Nelson, but I think it's time for him to go back to the bench. I think it's time for Matt Nelson's run as a starting tackle to be over, because it's not, you know, like, yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, because, you know, it takes away that extra, like, well, he didn't have time, right? Because, like, and people... can continue to get upset about if the Lions moving Sewell back over to the right side and getting Decker back in here on the left side if they want. Like, I think Sewell's going to be fine. I think you've got bigger fish to fry here on your plate right now, all these things above. But I think the greater point is, you know, you've got, you know, Jonah Jackson's playing his best football ever right now. I still think Sewell's going to be fine. I think he's actually getting better and better each week too, a little bit. I think we're seeing him steady. I do think Decker's going to help that, and I think it's going to take away some of the, well, you had time, and so make a play, right? Like, now we got to see, like, these next nine from Goff, you know, we talked about it like 2 weeks ago, like, I think before the Rams game, like, man, this is your career right here, the rest of the season. Like, you got to make plays, step up, make throws. We've seen him do it a couple times, do it all the time. Like, take whatever, you've got to be able to make plays when everything else is broken down, because that's just the situation you're in. Be a starting quarterback. You're making a lot, you know, like, either you're that guy or you're not. Like, and I think that we've everything we've seen so far tells us that he's not enough. And if it would be better if all these guys were healthy, but would it be enough? And I think that that's the question that you have to maintain and ask yourself. It can't just be, is he giving you enough? It has to be, you know, like to get by or to win with, as Campbell said the one day. Is he giving you more? Is he being a leader? Is he being a quarterback? Is he being one of your best players? No. And so until that starts to become an answer, like, I think we have our answer on Jared Goff. And the contract is the contract, and that's going to have to be something that Holmes has to figure out. But, like, if he's bad all year and you go into next year and say he's coming back, man, I tell you, it's going to be hard. Like, that's the thing.
Well, so I think that getting Decker back, assuming he's coming back to play games here in the next couple
Yeah,
weeks,
right. That's a good
also
point.
Helps you. I mean, I think that there's obviously a big Goff evaluation going on here. I think there's an evaluation of how Anthony Lynn is calling this offense and what it's going to be moving forward. But I also think you're looking at things like, you know, they're trying to decide stuff like, do we feel like we have enough in Williams and Swift to be dominant in the run game? Should we keep Vitae for next year?
Right.
Is TJ Hockenson worth $14 million a season? Like, yeah. I have all these other things to figure out in the next few months here, too, that are sort of tied to getting something from quarterback play that lets you evaluate that stuff. If your quarterback's just back there and not doing anything,
exactly,
it makes it a lot harder to see the big picture too. So I think that that's also part of it. I mentioned Swift briefly. He averaged, he had 12 carries for 27 yards. Sunday when Cincinnati was in, he had 13 carries for 24 yards. He's averaging 3.2 per carry this year. Is there any concern in that area for him that he's just not going to ever be? I mean, people keep asking Campbell, well, does he remind you of Alvin Kamara? Is he like Alvin Kamara,
right,
or Christian McCaffrey?
Yeah.
And those guys are not averaging 3.2 yards per carry. So can he take the step there to be one of those guys?
Well, I think it's just going to be a matter of, he's not there yet, but I think, it's still a matter of, like, I think he can do it. But it's the decisiveness and sort of the consistency with his cuts, I think, you know, between the tackles, because that's what Williams gives you. I mean, you saw how they miss him.
Right.
You know, the ability, and Lynn talks about that so much, like Williams can run, you know, those wide zones and inside zone. I mean, he can do either, but when you put him between the tackles, I mean, he really isn't afraid to put the shoulder down and just run somebody the hell over. And, you know, we know that Swift can do that, but there are times when he doesn't, and there's times when he tries to make a cut and he gets just like stuck by a linebacker or whatever. And I think sometimes with Swift, it's still, you know, that balance between sort of powering it down and just kind of letting the play come to you, which sometimes he does really well and it's amazing. And it's like, whoa, what the hell was that? Like, and then sometimes he's trying to do too much. And I do think that there's the balance there between doing too much and just kind of letting your natural sort of gifts kind of take you where you need to go. And when he's on and when he's at his best, I think that's what we see from him. And then sometimes when he's trying to cut his way, you know, make cuts when he just doesn't have to, I think he gets himself into problems. So I think that, I think that that is something that they're probably, you know, they talked about that with him in the spring. And that was something that I think that they have been hammering on him all year. Like, you're really good, but like, you're not even close to being what you could be. And I think that that's something that I'm not so sure Swift totally realized when he got here this year. I think he is starting to, you know, based on some of the comments and things we've heard last time we've talked to DeAndre, I think he's starting to get that. But like working with Deuce and Anthony Lynn, I think it's probably helped him see that. I think he probably thought coming to this year, I'm pretty good and I don't need anybody's help. And I think that he's learning, right? Like, yeah, you do. And you could be like outstanding, but, you know, we do need to work on this, that, and the other. And I think that that's, for the second half of the season, you want to look at something that's like, man, look at a guy that maybe can turn the corner. I think Swift's a candidate, right? I mean, we've seen what he can do when he's in a groove. I mean, he can change a game. I don't care who you're playing. So, concern, yeah, but like, I think that they're in the right hands. He's got good coaches, and I think that that's still a good thing. I think that's still a positive. And, you know, Williams get back healthy, he's good for Swift too. Having him there with him too is a good thing too, I think, still. What about Jamar Jefferson? What do you think of him getting in there playing a little bit? Sorry, did I cut off your ad there?
No.
Did I ruin our ad?
We'll find a spot for the ads.
That was the first time we saw him this year.
So yeah, and I think if you're looking for like pseudo bright spots from Sunday, he was probably one. He's definitely interesting. I think he's He always was intriguing with the, you know, especially with Anthony Lynn, the way he likes to use his running backs. I think you know, you sort of see that he. Like, he's not DeAndre Swift, but he's a guy that could be out there on all three downs. I mean, I think the big thing with him, and one of the reasons he wasn't playing, is because, you know, Deuce Staley said maybe the first time we talked to him, like, if you can't block for me as a running back, you can't play. And I think that that was maybe as much as anything else holding him back from getting on the field. And now they didn't really have a choice on Sunday, so you get him some playing time. But I do think he's interesting. I mean, if you're, you know, if you've got Williams and Swift is your 1-2, like I can see certainly why they would see him as maybe a number three guy in behind that, because I think that if he's going well, like I said, you can kind of use him in any spot and and get some yards, and he can catch the ball and all those things. So I don't know. I thought he played all right. What'd you think?
It was good to see him out there. Him and Godwin, they both made some plays. I mean, that was two guys that they were hopeful for, you know, coming into the year. And I wonder if, you know, those are two. Although, you know, with Williams, like, I guess Jefferson will probably just have to take advantage of what he can when he's hurt, because when he's back, you want him playing. I mean, that's, I wouldn't want to take too many carries off his plate. But yeah, if Jefferson can find a way to sort of like, that's a, you know, we're talking about God and Godwin too. You're talking about guys that like somebody that can get open. If you can find a way to get guys in the game and just find a way to get them open and help Goff a little bit, right? Like, maybe that's something that they can look at as they go forward. Maybe, you know, maybe it's about playing more two backs, you know, maybe it's,
well,
about,
it's also, you know, there's a special teams conversation there too, because Godwin's been your kick returner. He's been pretty good on the coverage teams. And I don't know that you're getting that from Jamar Jefferson either. So when they get down to figuring out who's sitting on Sunday, I think that typically plays a big role on those last like 5 or 10 guys. And so that's part of it too. But yeah, I mean, if you're 0-8 and you're trying to see who's going to be here, you may as well get your draft pick running back on the field little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, hell, I wouldn't hate it if they gave him a game later in the year and just said, hey, man, we're going to give you like 20 carries. Let's see what happens. Like, I mean, like, those are things that I know you're trying to get a win, and that's like what we've talked about so much on this show. Like, man, it would really probably take a lot of this. It would take a lot of the sting out of a lot of this. If you had like 1 or 2 wins, but like you said, like you'd also be able to just be like, screw it. We're just going to give Jefferson the whole game today. And if we lose by 60, we lose by 60. It's a little easier to do that when you're 1-7.
Just get one. Yeah, just get one. And, not and you can do whatever you want, man. Exactly. Play whoever.
that's what it feels like is happening here, right? Like, can we just get one game so we can just say screw it and start like all rookies for the rest of the season?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you get the one and this can become like, everyone can just sort of accept that this is like extended preseason.
It's going to be Tim Boyle and spring training. Yeah,
right. You just got to get that one because you cannot go 0-17.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And it feels like that's holding them back. Yes, for sure.
I'll take the ad break now. Okay. I'll make sure we get it in there. I don't want to lose our sponsors. All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com.
Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, so we've hit on a couple of these topics, Goff and Swift, but I just a little bit before we started recording, turned in my second half predictions for the Lions. I put five things on there. It'll be up on the site this week, so you're getting a little bit of a spoiler here if you're listening to the show Wednesday. But right off the top, I said that they are going to win at least two and maybe three games. Mm-hmm. Am I crazy at this point? We've said 0-17 like a dozen times now on this show.
I don't think they're going to go 0-17. I still don't think they're going to go 0-17. I think they're going to win a game. I think that they've had too many of those good efforts. They're going to get some guys healthy, I would think. Not everyone, not enough, but they're going to get some guys back. I think they're going to get, I don't know about two, but I think that they're going to get one. I don't think they're going to go 0-17, but I do think it's definitely on the table, you know, because we've, I mean, there are no promises with these injuries once you get, that's the other thing too to keep in mind, like once you get into October, November, if like a rookie or somebody that's playing gets dinged up, it's like, do you want to keep playing him or do you want to shut him down? So like, but the other thing to keep in mind, and this is why I could see your two or three coming true, is that there's going to be a lot of other teams that are going to be quitting real hard, real soon. Real soon, right? Like end of November, December, you know, a couple things don't go right. Somebody's out of the playoffs. They don't like their coach. We quit. Okay? Like that, that's going to happen. And I do think that if the Lions go into one of those days where it's like, they've got the effort where they want it and the other side just doesn't want it, doesn't care, then, you know, I think they should be able to get one. I think they play too hard to go 0-17. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see that happening. I don't know about two or three, but I don't know about 0-17.
There's a couple games for me that just feel unwinnable. Arizona at home. I don't think that's going to be
pretty at all.
I mean, that's the week before Christmas.
Yeah.
I'll probably be finishing my holiday shopping online during that one. At Seattle, if the Seahawks have anything to play for and Russell Wilson's in there, I don't think you're winning that game.
No.
So that's two of the remaining nine. The rest of them, though, like Pittsburgh,
yeah, I mean,
Pittsburgh in week 10, like Pittsburgh plays Monday night this week. They play Sunday night the week after that against the Chargers. They have like one or two games a year where they just don't really show up, it seems like. So maybe you hang in that one. Cleveland's the week after. Their offense hasn't been very good. So that's one. It might be 13-13 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Who knows? And then you get Chicago on Thanksgiving, Minnesota at home. You go to Denver. Like that's three in a row. That
those are all winnable.
Not good. Yeah. You know, and you should have beaten Minnesota already. So
yes.
You go to Atlanta, like that's winnable the day after Christmas. And then Green Bay, who knows? They might have wrapped up the one seed by then. So then you're getting Jordan Love and
versus Tim Boyle for the dub.
So, I mean, I think that there's opportunities here. As I wrote in those predictions, like we know this team is bad. Watching them each week and watching them through the summer, it doesn't feel like a historically bad team to me. Like this doesn't feel like the worst team in football history. Like, that 0-16 Lions team was
really bad.
Like, you understand how they got to 0-16. Right. This doesn't feel like a winless team. So I think you're right. I think that they're – maybe it is Thanksgiving. People are circling that one now that the Philadelphia one went by the wayside.
Next holiday.
I think that's a possibility for sure. So we'll see. I do think that they'll get something. I don't think they're coming out of this 0-17.
We'll see.
For everyone's sake, I hope they don't.
Their sake they don't. Yeah.
So sort of tied into that, one of my other predictions was that I said Jared Goff is going to be a 17 game starter for the Lions this year. And before I let you answer, I'll explain why. The big reason is pretty much from the moment they picked him up, we've heard from Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell about Goff's toughness. And about his durability, he's only missed, you know, he played through the injuries in the playoffs last year. He's only missed two games over the past 4 years. He's a guy who's going to go out there. He doesn't show up the way it showed up with Matthew Stafford, where he's going to run for a first down and lower his shoulder and like have to crawl back to the huddle. But he's a guy who's going to go out there every week. He has a history now of being pretty durable, playing through some stuff. And I think as we've been talking about, they are still trying to figure out what year two of Jared Goff, if there is a year two of Jared Goff in Detroit, is going to look like. And for me, that extends through the rest of this season. So I think unless he gets hurt, I mean, obviously, like,
right,
to the point that he can't play, obviously that changes things. But if he's good enough to go every week, I think he starts every week. Because I also don't, like, David Blau, I don't think is a guy they're going to bench him for.
No.
So it would be Boyle.
It would be Boyle.
We don't know when Boyle's going to be back either. So I don't know. Do you seem to think Boyle's getting one?
Well, you know, when you said this one to me originally, I was originally like, I disagree. I'm not ready to say that yet. But as you explained that, I'm more in line to agree with you that he'd start the full 17. But I would say this. This would be my counter to it. Because I can't, I think I would agree.
You shouldn't.
I think I would agree with you for all the things you said, that he probably will be a 17 game starter. But if Boyle is healthy in any of these next whatevers, and they get into one of these games against one of these teams, like you talked about, where, you know, it's a winnable game, and Goff is playing like crap, I am not going to cross off the list that they bench him in the middle of the game and put Tim Boyle in and see what happens. I mean, I don't know if Tim Boyle is going to come in and save the day. I don't know if Tim Boyle is going to come in and do enough to be like, well, that was that much better than Jared Goff. And that's why I kind of think that you would just go back to the next week and you just start Goff again. But like, I do think that if Boyle gets healthy again and we see Goff go through another one of these, like, what are you doing? Then I think that we're going to see Tim Boyle get a chance somewhere in here this year.
They do like him.
Him a lot. And I don't think Dan Campbell, if he has an option, is going to stand there and watch Goff throw the ball out of bounds on fourth down anymore. If, like, you know what I mean? If there's an option and you can send a message one way or the other, I think he's going to do it. And I think that that's what I would say to that. I still do. I think I would agree with you that, like, based on all we're seeing right now today, yeah, I think he probably would be the 17 game starter, but I don't totally want to put that in ink yet.
Yeah.
But I do see where you're coming from on that, because like you said, I mean, a year or two is definitely still something that is being evaluated.
I mean, some of that is, like I said, that I don't know when Tim Boyle's going to be
exactly
back. Like, he just started throwing. I forget what day we were inside with them this past week because it was raining, but he was throwing on the side like 15 yard throws. Mm-hmm. And that's the most I've seen him do.
Right. He had a wrap a couple
now.
Weeks ago. Yeah. Right.
And so they haven't started his clock to come back from IR yet, which gives him a 21-day window. So you're still talking like this could be December before he's ready to play a game. I don't, or maybe he comes out of the bye and they activate him. I don't know. They do like him. Mm-hmm. I do think he'd be more fun to watch in a short-term window because he'll get out of the pocket and run. And he, based on what we've seen from him, would prefer to throw downfield more than just about anything else. And so you at least would get some of those chances Jared Goff hasn't been giving you. He's also on a one-year deal. And so if they do like him as much as they say, you probably would like to get him a little bit of
you
a look
see him.
And just see if, I don't know that he would be, you know, your starter headed into next year, but maybe he's a guy you like enough to keep around. So I understand going to him if he's healthy. I don't know. The amount of times that Dan Campbell has gone out of his way to back Jared Goff after these games makes me think that they're.
But I think that's as much because they're, and it's not offense to Blau. I think they like Blau, but like he is not anyone's answer to anything here. Like, I think Boyle is possibly a bridge. He's possibly a cheap bridge to something else if you want to look at it from that standpoint. But I don't think Blau is. And I think that's the difference. You know what I mean? Like, and I think I would argue, like, if the situation arises again where Goff is just like, what are we watching here? Bad. And Boyle is healthy. I think he pulls the trigger on Boyle in moments where he hasn't with Blau. Because I think he's known, like, what are we gaining here by benching Goff for Blau? We're not ever going to start David Blau. He's never going to be a guy that we're going to go into a season reasonably. I think that's their eval on Blau is he's a really good guy to have around. He's a good backup.
Right.
He's a good guy to get us through a game. He's good for the starter. He's good for the starter's mental, you know, and everything. Cause you know, he's a good guy to be around. But you know, beyond that, I don't think that you're getting much. So I do think that Boyle would change that equation a little bit in Campbell's head. Maybe even in like a front, you know, because I think there's probably been times where he's been super pissed and it's just like, get him out of the game, but then has to himself and be like, well, no, that's not really going to do. But if you have Boyle there, I think, well, okay, well, screw it. Put him in and let's see what he can do, you know? Shit. Like, I think that that's something I could see happening much more than, you know, than previous to this point.
And you got pretty close to what probably could be an entire podcast episode of would the Lions have been better off getting one less first-round pick from the Rams, starting a $1 million quarterback, and not taking on Goff's contract.
When Gardner Minshew checked in.
A lot, too. So another one of my predictions I made here was I have DeAndre Swift finishing above 1,500 yards from scrimmage, which, as I mentioned, is not a huge stretch because I think, A, it's a 17-game season. B, he's on pace right now for like 1,496, so he's right there for 1,500 yards. But part of why I mentioned it is because Reggie Bush hit that number once as a Lion, and no one else has done it since, other than Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders over the past two decades. I think the other names on that list in the Super Bowl era are Herman Moore, Brett Perriman, and Billy Sims. I think that's it. That's the list. There's like six guys. So Swift would be the seventh. And so that's part of why I mentioned it, just because it hasn't really happened around here. And I think Swift is, you know, we've seen what he can do. He should get there. I mean, if he's healthy, there's no reason. I even wrote, I think, like, he could be a 2,000-yard from scrimmage guy, and I don't think anyone would really blink. Like, I think he has that in him, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that that's probably a goal that you put on him at some point. You know, it's like you could be a 2,000-yard all-purpose back. I mean, that's what his role should be in this league going forward. You know, a guy that, you know, like Alvin Kamara. I mean, Kamara is special, you know, and he's a guy that they load up and no one else is like him. No one else in the league has usage. He's like Tomlinson, LaDainian Tomlinson a little bit, you know, in the usage category of just being like a unique kind of a unicorn. But I think that Swift, you know, maybe it's not all the way like that, but I think that he can reasonably shoulder a similar load and be like a similar type weapon. That there's a lot of offenses like this in the league now that you see where you have the, you know, the kind of, like Lynn talked about, I mean, the guy that can run inside and out and the guy that can really do everything, which is what Swift is. And you got Jamal Williams and you got Swift. If you can keep another guy like Williams around here with Swift, man, that's pretty good. And yeah, I know I do. I think he's going to get every opportunity to get there. Certainly. He's going to get the touches. I think that they're ready for that. I do think that this was a positive eight games for Swift. You know, I think he's grown a lot, I would say. You know, if I look back to last year, obviously he was hurt for stretches and stuff. But if I look back to his good stretches last year and I look back to what we just saw from him, I think he has come a long way. I think he's grown a lot. I think he's getting better. And I think that's all good. You know, and I think that as you go forward here, if you're looking for stuff to hang your hat on, if you could get a win in a game where DeAndre Swift blows up, that would be pretty good. People would like that. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that that's possible. I think that's possible. I think that's something that you could see this year. And, you know, that would be a positive for people as well.
I think also, I know people have kind of gotten a little critical of Anthony Lynn and think he's been too kind of vanilla with the play calls lately. But I do think that, as I mentioned earlier, this is one of his strengths, getting the running backs the ball in space. And I think we've seen him design some stuff that's been really nice for Swift. Some of it hasn't clicked because of the line or because of Goff or whatever. But I think week to week, those are the plays that look the most creative and the most dangerous are the ones that he's drawing up for Swift, whether it's a two-back set or splitting them out wide or whatever. So I think that that's encouraging, too, for Swift's numbers and Swift's usage moving forward, is that they seem to have a good feel for where his strengths are, and that's coaching. Like, that's what you want. You want to find the strengths, and you want to lean into them, and I think they've done that most weeks. It didn't happen Sunday, but I think most weeks they've done that. So that's encouraging, I guess. You got anything here for the second half of the year? Anything? I won't put you on the spot for predictions once you have one, but you're looking forward to?
I think Tracy Walker is going to be a guy by the end of the year that we're talking about on a different level, a guy on a conversation, you know, a guy that's going to be, you know, someone that I think we look at as maybe a, you know, an anchor captain type guy. And I think he might already be there. I don't know. But I think that he's a guy that had, we just talked about Swift getting better in a lot of areas. I think Walker, we've all noticed that from basically since Campbell and Holmes got here, that he has been a different person and a different player and a guy that's been, working real hard to sort of prove that he wants to be part of this. And I think that he's a guy that we'll see and hear a lot more from as the year goes on. We've already seen and heard a lot more from him as this year's continued. I think Barnes too. I think Barnes by the end of the year, I'm going to stick on that one. I do think by the end of the year, we're going to think about Derek Barnes as just like, he's starting. He's the guy inside. Next year, he's going to be, you know, the guy that's ready to take this thing over. I think he's going to get there too. And I guess that's what I would say. I think that defensively, some rookies, if the health cooperates, Onsarike, Aleem McNeil, Barnes are three guys that I would look at and say they're playing well. We're seeing them get better every week. Julian too. I think you're going to have a core of guys defensively that you're going to be excited about. But it's just a matter of like, can you get a couple wins in there? Like you said, to make people less freaked out about that. But that's my kind of thing. I do think that you're going to be able to see some of these things defensively that Aaron Glenn sees, right? Like I think people have already seen them to a degree, but I think we'll be able to see more of it. Health's got to cooperate. Knock on wood for them, of course. But I think they're in the right direction in some of those spots on defense. And I think that's going to show up more as the year goes on here, especially in those games like we talked about when – to get a team that's quitting, you know what I mean? Like, sure. I don't think Walker and these guys are going to pack it in. So that's what I would say there.
We can get into a little bit more of this too next week, but what about for Sewell, especially if they push him back to the right side at some point and make way for Decker. What's the goal for the last 9 weeks for Penei Sewell here, regardless of which side of the line he's on?
I think it's to be better the second time around, especially. So, you know, when I'm looking, like when they play Chicago again, when they play Minnesota again, when they play Green Bay again, I really want to see what Sewell does with some of these guys the second time he sees him. And I really want to see sort of like how he's reacting to some of these, you know, in particular, if he sees, you know, like when they played Baltimore and he saw some of those speed guys, like if there's a couple guys that show up on the schedule later in the year, if he sees some of that, like how are you reacting not only to some of the guys that got you earlier in the year specifically, but how are you reacting to some of the moves that got you earlier in the year? Because to me, again, still too much is being fixated on right or left with Sewell. I think to me it was issues that we were seeing from him with like his punch and consistency and just like thinking, right? Like I think he was catching himself thinking too much about one move and this, that, and the other. So I think for me it's going to be, you know, just keep doing what you're doing in the run game. He's fine in the run game. Yep. He's already exactly what you want him to be, more or less. But it's, you know, are we going to see that second half consistency that we've gotten used to seeing from him in games kind of pick up for the whole year? You know, we've talked about that. Like, when Sewell gets beat, a lot of times in games, it's early. It's the first quarter. And then he steadies out and plays better the rest of the game. Now, right, can we see him do that? Can we see, like, three full games where we don't see Sewell have, like, any bad quarters? I think if we can get a stretch where we see that from him, like, he's going to be on his way. And you're going to be, you know, what you want at the end of the year, right or left, and it's not going to matter. I mean, the Decker conversation is one, I think, to have in the offseason for sure. And that's going to depend on how he plays the rest of this year. But, like, Sewell just needs to be looked at independent of right or left, whatever, who, you know, just get better. And I think he can do that no matter what's happening there the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mentioned that the Lions both got clobbered on Sunday, but I do think Sewell played – he was probably the best offensive lineman. I thought he played a fine game. He got beat once on your favorite Jared Goff play where he spins backwards for no reason and turns right into traffic. But other than that, I thought Sewell actually played pretty well. And I think that it's kind of interesting because when guys get drafted, I don't think we give enough credit to how difficult it is to flip from one side to the other. People always just say, well, just put him on the – he played left, so what? Put him on the right. And we just sort of – brush it off. I think we've probably gone back the other way now where people are talking like, well, if they move Sewell to the right, he's never going to figure out either side. This is, you're ruining him. And right, I think that's probably not true either. No. I think he can be good on either side. I think he can learn certainly some of the mental stuff, at least on either side of the line. So
I think this is going to make him better. I think this is, I think he's the type of guy based on everything we've heard. You know, you talk to the people around him in college, you talk to the people around him now, like, you know, Vitae, Jonah, all the guys that are playing with him now, like, just, I think he's the type of guy that this is going to actually help him. I think he'll be able to internalize it. I think he'll be able to become a better player because he's versatile. Like, I think that's part of what you got when you drafted Sewell, right? Like, the ability to sort of, like, there shouldn't be any cap to what, you know, he can maybe give you. Hey, if you want to use him at right tackle, maybe he's better. I don't know. I think that was part of what you got with him, that you don't necessarily want to put him in a box. Again, I go back to, I think a lot of the people that made a big deal about this early were doing it so that Sewell would be able to get paid as a left tackle. I think they were doing it for his benefit. And, you know, maybe that's what happens as you go forward anyway. But I think for the player, just for the player itself, like, yeah, I mean, Hank Fraley's not going to put him in a situation that's going to, like, jeopardize his growth if he doesn't think he can handle, you know, like, that's not happening here. I don't think that's happening here at all. I really don't. I think he's in good hands. He's around good players, and he's a good player. And he's, I think this experience is probably going to make him better. I mean, his first half of the season as a 20-year-old rookie was pretty good, right? I think that I would say that it was pretty darn good for 8 games in. I mean, would you say the same? I mean, wasn't perfect, but for all the things that we've talked about, pretty solid, not bad, you know, all things considered. And, you know, excited to see what he can do for the second half. And if it's on the other side, then it's on the other side. I mean, we'll see sort of what happens there as it goes forward.
And I, just to kind of close out there, I think you're seeing the progress of it too. It's getting better week to week. And like you said, it's getting better from the start of a game to the end of a game. He gets stronger as you go. And those are two important factors. So yeah, we, like I said, we can talk more about Sewell next week as we kind of tee up the second half of this year. The Lions have a bye this week and then go to Pittsburgh and Cleveland back-to-back weeks before the Thanksgiving home game against what might be a 3-6 Bears team at that point.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Some opportunities for wins. We'll see if they can get one. You can get the show ad-free on the Athletic app. Make sure you get over to theathletic.com and subscribe if you haven't yet. You can also subscribe to the show and rate us, review us. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, any place you listen to podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, let us know on Twitter. We will have a show next week. It'll be back on Tuesday. We kind of waited this week to see what the trade deadline held, which, as usual, was nothing. So next week we'll be back at our regular slot on Tuesday and get ready for that Pittsburgh game. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.